Ram Dass is a guy who, he's not a Christian, but he's a wise man. And a lot of the things he said ring true in my heart. And this one especially, to me, is such a beautiful metaphor for what it means to be family. And what it means to be a Christian. What it means to be human. We are walking each other home. None of us are there yet, are we? But we can sense home. And I sensed home this morning so strongly I wanted to cry. Because home is where all of this is, love, family, safety, hope. Jesus himself is our home. When you were invited to attend this Mother's Day service, you were shown a little video. And I want you to look at it again. And put on the glasses that tell you, this is how you find home. Let's look at that again.
Vines of time, you're in their grasp. A staircase to climb, breathing in gasps. The wind only knows what happened to me. Your rose trapped beneath the sea. This I know, I'll never let you down. This I know, I'll never let you down. On all the trees, echoing sound. If you're down on your knees for the final count, this I know, I'll never let you down.
Do children find their mom? Did you see some of them smelled their mom? Smell is such an amazing thing. And God's word tells us that if we are going to be able to walk each other home and to walk the lost world out there home, we have to smell right. Second Corinthians 2 verse 15. Everywhere we go, people breathe in the exquisite fragrance because of Christ. We give off a sweet scent, rising to God, which is recognized by those on the way to salvation. It's full of life. But those on the way to destruction treat us like the stench from a rotting corpse. Have you had people pull up their noses at you before because of Christ? Yes, a lot of us have. Have you had people come to you the way a bee comes to a flower and they don't yet know why? They just want to come. It's the smell. That smell has so many names. Grace is one of them. If we sound like law, it stinks. If we smell like law, it stinks. If we smell like grace, it brings people. I never actually had the experience of smelling the difference until I climbed Kilimanjaro with the Freedom Climb. And I won't tell you the whole story, but when you're finally on that crater rim, on your right-hand side, there's this major hole. I mean, that thing is a dormant volcano. It has a big crater. And the sulfur gas rises from that hole, and it stinks. It's a smell of hell on your right-hand side. And you are walking on a fairly treacherous, icy little rim, fully aware of the fact that if you give two steps to the right, you may very well end up in hell, figuratively speaking. But down this hole you go. And on the other side, there's this wide open space with a massive light blue, pure glacier standing there. And as I was walking on that rim, I realized that the walk home can either be on that very scary little slippery slope where we tell each other, you're going to fall. Be careful. Are you 100% sure you're absolutely in the middle of the right road? And it becomes such an unpleasant, scary, and exhausting journey home. Or we can tell each other every now and then, yes, I smell it too, but let's look to the left. And if you go close enough to that glacier to look at your reflection in it, the only thing it reflects back at you is the part of you that's already the color of heaven. Because that is what grace does. Grace shows you only the part of you that already looks like Jesus. Can you imagine? We are walking next to one another, walking home, constantly reminding each other of that bit of Christ we already see in one another. What a journey that would be, as opposed to the one we are constantly warning and threatening and amplifying the smell from the crater. Walking each other home is one where we desperately need to be a smell of life, to encourage. When I was on that crater rim, I had to make one of the hardest decisions of my life because I wanted to walk home, which in this particular case was Uhuru, the summit of Kilimanjaro. That means freedom in Swahili. I wanted to go there with my backpack on my back, strong and powerful. I wanted to arrive victoriously at that place. But there is this thing about going home in a Christian sense, and that is you do not arrive with your pride intact. If you still have your pride, you have not arrived. You cannot get there. And on that crater rim, there was this moment when I had to wave a white flag and say to my guide, Ramadhani, I cannot carry my bag. And he was already carrying one here, and one on his back, of other climbers who also couldn't cope, but who probably had less pride and tanked earlier. And he just grabbed that bag and he swung it over the open shoulder and he said, thanks, ma'am, it's a light one. And I started crying and never stopped again because he walked me home carrying my entire burden. And I was walking like this because those of you who have done Kili will know you walk like this. And crying in between. I won't try and imitate that as well. It's already offensive enough. Let's just summarize and say my walk home did not sound really good. But next to me was Ramadhani singing about Uhuru all the way home. If we are going to walk each other home, we have to smell of life. Because it gives hope. My favorite home smell is fresh baked bread. I don't do too well on bread, but I still like to smell it. Because when you smell it, there is the hope that there will be food. I don't know of any mother who will bake the bread and then go, no, there's nothing to eat. Or rusks or something and give it all to the neighbors. No, that would just be really rude. Because the smell creates hope. The knowing that there will be everything we need. For me, when I think of Mother's Day and I think of my grandmother and I think of so many smells that I love. Just for a second, remember the smells of home. It is so deeply emotional. It is so important that when Jesus said, I want you to remember me, he gave us bread. But I love that he breaks it once everybody's together, because bread that has already been cut and put in little blocks on a tray, it doesn't smell of anything. But the moment you open that lovely bread, you smell it. And he gave us wine. It's impossible to drink wine and not smell it. In fact, it's rude to not smell it first and appreciate what the beautiful people in the Cape did to that grape before it went in the bottle. And then you have to drink it. Jesus did that on purpose. He did it on purpose because he wanted us to smell him. He wanted us to smell home every time we eat bread, every time we drink wine. He wanted us to have hope. It is important. Children also find home by feeling. I loved seeing that little one feel his mom's middle. No, I don't know what the conclusion was. Too skinny, too fat, I have no idea, but it's interesting how he knows exactly. He just touches those hips and he goes, mm-mm. It's not them. But the feeling of the familiar, sometimes people and place just feel right. It can be halfway around the globe and you can't put your finger on it. It just feels right. This little box that my son crawled into felt like home to him, and he wouldn't come out. It's obviously because he has some sensory integration problems, and he likes a small space. When we moved into a house with a big room, he put the one mattress like this and the other one like that, and then the cupboards were like that so that he had a small enough space to feel safe. We're all forever creating a safe space around ourselves. But home is more than the space. And a real home has a very, very special feeling. It's a power to call you. And those of you who have traveled a lot will know that when you're away from home long enough, it's all you can think of. You just want to walk through that front door. Is this home calling? The homeless, the orphans, the spiritual fatherless. If it is not, we have to figure out why it isn't calling people home. Because a home calls out. And the other thing is, a home comes to get you. I want to read it to you from Luke 15, verse 20. The prodigal son was smelling hog food, pig food. He was in a bad place. And he remembered home. It called him because of who was there, because of the heart of his father. And it says, when he was still a long way off, his father saw him. Because home waits for you. It's watching out for you. If we are always here just looking up to God and looking at each other and never keeping an eye on the horizon, looking for the lost, we don't have the heart of home. This father saw him. And then look at what this home does. Because the home is not that building. The home is this father. He gets up and he runs towards the one who is lost. And he embraces him and he kisses him. There is something so amazing about taking home to people. I didn't understand this for a really long time because for me, home was that place where I could see a lot of other people were. I don't know if you have ever felt like the outsider Christian, the not yet arrived. I felt that for so many years. I can't even remember how many years. And one day at a youth camp, I went to the counselor and I said to her, "Can I describe Christianity to you? To me, it is a house standing in the middle of a forest. And I am somewhere in the forest. And between the trees, I can see to this little house. And there's a warmth and a light in there. And there are people in there, and they are with Jesus. And I can see them all through the window. But I can't get there. I just can't get in. I can see it's the place to be. I can feel it's the place to be. But I just can't figure out how to not be the orphan. I can't get home." And at the same time, I'm not too sure if I'm allowed to go home. I'm not sure if the door would open if I knocked. But I desperately want to go in. And I asked her this question. I said, "Tell me how to get there." And she said, "No, it's not the way it works. Stand where you are now in the woods. Close your eyes. And wait." And I closed my eyes. And in my mind's eye, I saw Jesus. And he opened that door. And he came through the wood on that secret path I just couldn't find. And he walked right up to me, lantern in his hand, found me in the dark, and picked me up and took me home. In the end, it is only he who makes the orphan a son and daughter, just as we sang today. He's the one who comes to your woods to come and get you and to bring you home. On that same climb, after summiting, there wasn't anything left of me, especially my knees were just absolutely finished. And my guide looked at me and he said to me, "You don't have it in you to go down this mountain the normal way. It's not going to work because you have been in this low oxygen space for too long. You're not going to make it if we let you do that. You have to hook in with me, close your eyes, and I'm going to run you down this mountain." I wasn't very sure how that would work. And he said, "You just lift your knees a little bit like this." And sometimes, in order for us to get home, that needs to happen. Sometimes we don't have it in us. We just don't. And we have to trust enough to lean on somebody to run us down our mountain if we don't have it in us. And I remember sometimes falling and rolling, and I would lie on Ramadhani or Ramadhani would lie on me, and I wouldn't even care because it was just so good to lie down for a little bit. That is how you walk people home. You do it at the tempo they can handle. It's called grace. That is what it feels like. It allows you to lie in the gravel a little bit, and then it tells you, "Come on, you can get up, let's go." And then it picks you up, and then you go again. And after many hours of this, I started what I thought was probably hallucinating. And they warn you against this when you climb these mountains. They tell you, if you see pink little piggies running around or little girls playing with balls in little frilly dresses, they're probably not there. So keep it to yourself. Because if you share this wonderful vision you're having, they're going to send you off the mountain on the mountain ambulance, which is not fun. The mountain ambulance is not fun. So I saw this, and normally when you have a bit of an hallucination, it kind of floats a bit and it becomes clearer and clearer. But this thing was becoming clearer and clearer until the point where I said to Ramadhani, "Do you see the boy?" And he said, "Yes, I do." But we had ice rain coming from the front in our faces. And this boy was wearing shorts and a t-shirt. And he was running with a jug of Oros and a cup coming up the mountain. And at that point, just something coming up the mountain didn't make any sense to me because the only thing I could think of is that tent where they make the tea that I could see in the distance. I was going for home. And in that entire last stretch, nobody ever said, come on, hurry up, it's getting late. This is, you're taking too long. Because they were walking me home in grace. And this boy has the job of meeting what I call the LSDs, the lamsik and doyes, the ones who are clearly not on their own legs going to make it. And he runs up and down that mountain with Oros for the ones who are really not shaping. That's that beautiful thing about love. It doesn't overtake us. It doesn't run past us and scream, hey, are you coming? It comes towards us from home, and it brings us that hope. That is what home feels like. Now, I was just wondering if we could have a little bit more patience with one another on this journey home. If we could sometimes run with Oros, no judgment, no criticism, no wise scripture, just Oros. And just the fact that somebody comes from that direction gives me the hope that I can get there too. That's maybe all I need at that particular point. When I went hunting one day, I had the opportunity to kill a black hartebeest. I never had that privilege, swart hartebeest. But when we approached with the bucky, the whole herd ran through the little dip out the other side. And the farmer said to me, we're going to have to do something else because they won't come back. They're very, very smart animals. They now know that we're after them, it's over. And just as we turned that bucky around, I saw something, and he also did, in the long grass. It wasn't quite hunting season yet. It was about May, and the grass was still long. And we could only see the sloped back of what looked like either a wild dog or a hyena. And the farmer just told me, this thing is going to make so much damage. Kill it. And I wanted to know where the sweet spot was, because I don't like to hurt things. I like to kill them. One shot. They mustn't even see it coming. So I wanted to know the sweet spot, and he said, headshot. And I'd never taken a headshot, so I was a bit nauseous by the thought of putting a bullet in something's head. But it's a dangerous animal. That's what I kept telling myself. This is a dangerous thing. I have to kill it. So I aimed, and just before I pulled the trigger, because I really could only see the ears, and as I said, just this shape of the back, this farmer screamed at me from inside the bucky, and he said, wait, look at this, and he handed me the binoculars that were a bit stronger than my telescope, and I looked through that, and it was a brand newborn black wildebeest calf. Same, julle weet mos like hulle het mos ook sulke skaam boutjies. Same, that same shape. And I had nearly killed this baby. And just then the Holy Spirit said to me, you do the same to my babies. All the time. You look at them, just a quick glance through the grass, and they look like a wild thing. And then you take aim and you take headshots and you take them out. Because they don't look right yet. They don't sound like right yet. They are just not the perfect church people yet. And when we looked up, the mother of this little calf was running on the other side. The dust was flying up. She was so upset because she saw this situation. And I think that is God. That is the mother heart of God, upset that we do not walk each other home in grace, that we are impatient, that we are dragging people in the dirt behind us because they're not moving fast enough for us, and that we expect them to look right and sound like and do right from day one. Because when that little calf finally, we had this whole National Geographic moment with the bucky reuniting mom and baby, when that thing came out of the grass, The afterbirth was still sticking to its little butt. It was born that morning. And he said, okay, we're not going to get one of these. Maybe you want to go for eland. But the whole desire to hunt that just left me. I said, no, I want to go home. Because I remember things I have said to people that that stank of hell, that didn't feel like home, and that definitely broke their hope, and that disqualified them from home. I want to be that glacier that reflects back to them who they really are in Christ. But I don't do that very well. I think that is why God takes us up mountains. I think there's a reason why we climb until there's nothing left of us, until we lose our dignity, until we need help. And I think when Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn, blessed, you know, all the Beatitudes, he did that on a mountain. And I think he walked them up that mountain until everybody was tired and everybody was thirsty and everybody was hungry, so that people could remember that we are all human, and so that they would have grace with one another. Some of these children also found their moms, I think, by the sound of their voices. Don't you think sometimes home sounds like something? There's a sound to home, in my mind anyways. And what it sounds like is the sound of an SMS or a WhatsApp coming through from home, and it's that familiar beep beep. Who of you have a special sound for mom? Special ringtone. Hey, there is one. He has a homing sound. Isaiah 41 gives us a guide for what home is supposed to sound like. Comfort. Oh, comfort my people. You can't see this. Oh, you can. That is still back. Says your God. Speak softly and tenderly to Jerusalem. But also make it very clear that she has served her sentence, that her sin is taken care of, forgiven. She's been punished enough and more than enough. And now it's over and done with. Home sounds like forgiveness. Home sounds like a second chance. I think one of the main reasons people don't go back to their physical homes is because there are no second chances. It's because mistakes are not tolerated. It is because faults are not forgiven. Because there is the sound of justice and not the sound of grace. I'm not going to stand still at that very long, because I think it is a fairly obvious one, and we are all, to a great extent, guilty of not watching how we speak to one another in a way that will call people home. If we look at the world now and we say, all right, I do, I understand this is beautiful, figurative speech, I get it, but how practically, how do I bring orphans home? How do I bring homeless home? I want to give you a quick illustration. I need five men who have at least 30 rand in their pocket. Or a card, because we do have a card machine. So that's also all right. To come to the front quickly, to bid on these Cook Sisters. It's unconventional, but Shofar can handle it. Okay, so people to bid on these, absolutely fantastic. And if you do not, no, if you want to bid on it, you can have a taste first. That's also all right. So anybody who wants a taste to decide whether you want a packet of Cook Sisters, quickly rush to the front for me, please. Remember, it's Mother's Day. You're going to need these. This is very easy shopping for specialty. Thank you very much. We've got 1, 2, 3. We just need another one. Otherwise, there's no competition. You can't have an auction if there's no competition. One more. You can just chase up the bid. You don't have to eventually buy if you're smart. Okay, anybody wants to make sure how much it's worth? Go for it. There's a point to this, people. Stay with me. Ja, baie lekker. So do I have 20 rand for a packet from you? 30? 25? Okay, he say he'll buy for 25. 28? 30? 31? Okay, so that we're going to go for the three top bids. We've got 30, 31, 32. Okay, we've got one for 40. Okay, 41. Well, you can also put in 40. Then you're the top three buyers. Then it. Here it is. It's unopened, untasted, untested. Baked yesterday. 45. Okay, sold. 40, 41. 45, 41, and 40, whatever. Those three guys, you got it, you bought it, you have to come and pay at the desk. You get your... Okay, the point of this exercise, no, it's for real. You have to really pay for real, and you have to take it. There you go. Yeah, you can either leave the money here or at the front. Okay, what just happened now... Thank you very much. This money... Right here. Thank you very much. I was going to settle for a total of 80, but this is great. 80 rand is what you can buy a child for. And you can taste first and decide. And this happens too many times to count across the world, but in our country, 100,000 times a year. And these men have just saved three generations in Africa, because this money is enough to give a microloan to a gogo on the banks of the Tanganyika. What's a meer? Like. And what she will do with it, if she does the same as the grandma I spoke to, is she will buy a packet of popcorn kernels and a little bit of oil and a few plastic bags, and then she'll borrow salt and a pot. And she'll pop this and she'll bind it into little bags and she'll sell it, and she'll take that money and buy a pot and salt and two packets of popcorn kernels, and then she will break the cycle of her entire tribe, where they raise child number one and number two, and child three, four, and how many else will come after are sold. But if she can benefit from $8, it's just $8, and get the workshop to know how to become an entrepreneur, she can make sure that her daughter doesn't sell her grandchildren and they can all live. This is how easy it is to walk somebody home. This is how cheap it is to walk a whole generation home. But some people are taken so violently from their homes, taken across borders, locked up in places, that it takes 80 rand just to buy her underwear so that we can put her on a bus to take her to a safe house. And then we haven't started with her rehabilitation. We haven't started with therapy. We haven't started with antiretroviral drugs. We haven't started with a treatment of any kind. And this morning, I have challenged you to walk each other to a spiritual home with grace. But I have another question for you, and that is, are you willing to walk the trafficked and the stolen and the enslaved home if it costs you more than Cook Sisters? Will you do it? Because there hasn't ever been a harder test for the church than this. Because feeding hungry people is relatively easy. It's not complicated. Buying medicine for people with HIV is not complicated. But this is so complicated because we have to heal the whole world. We have to heal the person who would sell a child. We have to heal the person who would buy a child. We will have to heal the person who will use it and abuse a child. And it takes three things: people going, people giving, and people praying. And that is why we gave you these prayer guides, to pray. Last year, when the Freedom Climb climbed Kathmandu Mountain, the day they summited, 47 people were released, or 41 people, and 7 traffickers, or 15 traffickers, I have the numbers confused now, but it was an amazing breakthrough, were arrested in Kathmandu on the streets that same day. Because when we climb mountains, and by the way, you don't pay for my sticks and my backpack, it's already paid for. All of this money goes to human trafficking projects. But when it's not about us climbing mountains, it is about us praying mountains out of the way. And all of you can do it with us, because this is the way to get everybody home. Now, I have given you a little cage like this. And I want you to take this now as an individual, if you came in alone and you have one. If you came in as a couple, you can share one. If you came in as a family, you need only one. Can we put up hands if there's somebody who has extra, can you wave it? And if there's somebody who needs, can you put up your hand? Okay, there are three people who don't have. Anybody who has an extra one in their family, can you please hand it over? And then as long as their hands are up, we're still looking for extras. Anyone have an extra? There's one coming. I can give this one. Do we still need one this side? We're good. All the hands are down. Looks like we're good. This little cage symbolizes home. But a home shouldn't have three locks on it. But I like that the bird is on the outside, don't you? It's not caged. Because the truth is that Christ has come to set us free, and we are free indeed. I want you to think about your own home for a minute. The home that you are creating, either your family or just who you are as an individual or as a couple. And I want you to reflect on these three things. Is the smell right? Does it smell of grace? Does it feel right? Does it feel as though home is calling you? Is it coming towards you? Is it meeting you where you are, patiently? The last one, does it sound right? Does it say your name? I love that little quote from a boy who said, love is when people say your name and you know your name is safe in their mouth. Is that what it sounds like? Is your name safe? Is other people's name safe in your mouth? And if you can honestly say it is so, or if you make the commitment today to make it so, I want you as a little unit to take off these locks. And I'm going to pray for you while you do this. But you also have to talk, so I'm going to pray a little bit and then I'm going to be quiet so that you can talk. Lord, I pray that you will make our homes places where we smell grace. We're not threatened by hell. We are met where we are with oros instead of criticism. And it sounds right, because we are hearing words of life. Lord, only you can do this. Lord, teach us how. This is where you talk to each other about this. Sometimes we need to just commit and tell someone in our family, I will never tell that story about that mistake you made again. That is how we stop the sulfur from rising from the pit. We stop talking about each other's mistakes. You may also ask each other, this is the thing I need hope for, and I need you to speak that hope into my life, the hope that I will one day. You can complete that sentence any way you like. Let's commit to speak that hope and encouragement into each other's lives. If you as a family or as a couple are willing to walk other people home, decide now who it is. Think of who you regard as an orphan, as a little wild thing in the grass that looks like a hyena and is probably threatened, but is just a baby. I want you to make a commitment together and pray for that person now and ask the Lord to show you how to walk them home.